Hi there, my name is Vince Salerno, and welcome to the Vince Salerno Podcast. If you're looking for a place to get your weekly filmmaker fix, well, you've come to the right place. On this podcast, I discuss the latest in movie news, such as trailers, rumors, and more. I also discuss trends in the film industry and give my own insight as a filmmaker with special guests that are friends and film fans alike. As a filmmaker, I'm always learning new things through different techniques and perspectives, and I'm happy to have you all join me as we talk about the things that excite and unite us. So grab your popcorn and a nice cold drink, sit back and relax, because the Vince Salerno Podcast starts right now. Hey guys, welcome back to the Vince Salerno Podcast, episode 51, first one of 2021. I'm your host, Vince Salerno. I'm back. I'm here, as usual. Who else would be here in the host chair? I hope I'd be here. My name's on the frickin' thing. Anyways, I'm here. And I don't know about you guys, but my 2021 has been off to a pretty great start. We're kind of getting out of COVID. Movies are coming back slowly but surely. Everything's kind of semi-returning to normalcy, and I got some exciting projects and stuff brewing. One of which is, of course, this podcast. I'm always trying to change and improve things, and I'm glad to be doing that today. I'm also glad today to introduce my special guest on this episode. He is a longtime friend and a good friend. We've worked together on many projects, going as far back as our high school, middle school years. I don't remember when we started working together, but we've been working together for a long time, and we're still working together to this day. Welcome, Eric Wells.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here. Yeah. Yeah, my name is Eric Wells. I'm a longtime friend of Vince's. Like you said, we started back when I was in middle school, he was in high school. We started working together on small projects and have just kind of progressed throughout the years. Just a little bit about me ever since. I've been in and out of the scene when it comes to film. I've been working on small projects on and off. And then most of my experience is actually on stage. I do a lot of stage acting and a lot of stage work. Yeah, just a tad bit about me.
Solid. Yeah. He plays a good Puerto Rican.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry to bring that one up.
That's a rough memory.
Oh boy. Anyways. Yeah. Like Eric said, we've been working together for a long time. We did, correct me if I'm wrong. We started out doing plays together, right? And then we did El Pasorbo, or was it the other way around?
I think the first thing we did was Elpis Orb, and then eventually we progressed into doing plays and stuff together.
I think you're right, yeah. Because I knew you going into Bye Bye Birdie.
Correct.
Yeah, we started out, I was in this leadership through drama program where we actually had to make a hour and 50 minute feature film with the help of some adult mentors, and Eric was one of the extras, actors on the set. He popped up in almost every scene playing some obscure characters, obscure extra, and then our friendship continued on through doing plays at Mills Maskers in Glenwood, Iowa, and we've kept in touch ever since. And I guess talking about recently, he has been cast as my brother in my new film, The Eastman Brothers, which we're still working on. We're kind of readjusting, as I've said on social media. The movie's kind of on a pause for now as we're reevaluating, readjusting things. We're taking this time that we have, which is a blessing, really, to make the film even better than what we were initially going for. So looking forward to that, and looking forward to working with you some more on this movie. It's really fun stuff, and Eric is doing such a great job with these scenes. It's pretty fantastic, his acting abilities.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
Of course. All right. Well, first order of business, those of you tuning into the podcast, you longtime listeners, if I even have any longtime listeners, I don't know. Anchor doesn't really give me those kind of stats. some new things that are going to be happening on this podcast. As you've heard, I have recorded a pre-recorded intro as opposed to me opening the show on air, or just riffing with somebody about nothing related to the show for like 10-15 minutes, like a cold open. I did a poll, and a lot of you guys said that kind of distracted from the show. You guys wanted shorter episodes, episodes dealing with specific things and specific things regarding my expertise, my experience, other guests, and even episodes with just me. And I guess that's what you guys want. I don't know why I'm kind of boring by myself, but if you want it, I'll do it. So I took the poll. I got your guys' opinions, and I'm going to take it. So yeah, there's going to be some changes going forward. The episodes are going to be shorter. I don't know how long this one's going to go, but I'm going to try to keep it at, an hour or less. If we go a little over, I'm not too bummed about that, but yeah, we're going to try to fly through things a little quicker. We're still going to take time to go through opinions and discuss things properly, but we're not going to do like I did in the past, like ridiculously long episodes. So yeah, expect that. And speaking of that, let's get right into our first part of the show, which is what have we watched? Every opening of the show, we talk about things that we've watched that have caught our eye, things we want to recommend, even things that we didn't like, that we want people to just know that, hey, either this is a bad movie and you should totally watch it because it's funny bad, or this is an atrocity to God and creation itself and you should never, never watch it. Any one of those things, take your pick. So let's go ahead and get started. Eric, I'll go ahead and start off with you. If you have one or two things you want to share that you've watched recently that you'd like to share, liked or disliked, the floor is yours.
Sure. Well, I definitely think the most relevant right now is, of course, WandaVision. We don't have to get into that right now,
we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, but that's first and foremost on the mind. So that was the most recent thing I've watched. And then I've actually started getting into Family Guy. I've never watched Family Guy before, but a friend of mine said I just needed to sit down and watch it. So I've actually just started picking it up and going through. I'm in the third season right now, and it's all right so far. You know, I'm not really into the whole animated comedy sort of thing, but I am enjoying it. I am so far entertained. And then aside from that, I actually just went and saw a original adaptation of The Phantom of the Opera last night. A small Christian nonprofit organization in Omaha just performed that last night, and saw a couple people I know, some new faces as well. Pretty good performance, you know. I was entertained. The guy who was playing Phantom, according to their playbill, was located out of Lincoln, Nebraska, and he was an amazing performer. He did such a good job. All around, it was really good costuming, and the story was different, as in it was following the book a lot more closely than the Andrew Lloyd Webber version or the movie version does. But yeah, it was overall a very entertaining show. And it really did spring to mind, like, hey, you know, we do have these big Broadway productions, but we can still make our own adaptations of these classic stories when it comes to things like Phantom of the Opera or like Les Miserables and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of taking, because I believe those specific stories are in the public domain, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's probably why they were allowed to do that. And that's awesome. I love that. Just the idea of creating an original adaptation of something like that. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of things going into public domain, is you get new interpretations and stuff. I don't know specifically if this particular property is in the public domain or not. I don't think it is. But I think about like Willy Wonka all the time. I love both adaptations of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I love Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory for distinct reasons. Like, they both are so different from each other, and they both have such a unique perspective on the story. And both kind of have the same message at heart and both have a level of weirdness to it. I've seen a lot of people who are just like, oh, I prefer the original is the best, and the Johnny Depp version is like an atrocity. It's like, no, it's not. I didn't say that. It's dark. I mean, both movies are dark. What am I saying? But anyway, just the point being, like, I like that idea of, you know, things deserve to be reinterpreted throughout time. I'm not one for endless reboots and remakes, but like, if you're remaking it with an actual purpose and there's an actual, like, you know, this story warrants being told in this particular way, I'm all for it. But
right,
those types of films are far and few between.
And hey, even if you don't like what it comes out with, like if you didn't like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but you love Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, or Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, you still have the original movie. You can always go back to it. So bring it on.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. And you're the first you're the first person on the show to ever plug or recommend a play or musical, so sure. that's pretty awesome. And I miss musicals so much. I can't even remember the last one I saw. It's been so long. Or even the last one I acted in. I haven't acted in a play or musical, I think, since I guess I was in a Shakespeare play in college, but I was also doubling as stage manager too, so. But yeah, that is awesome. Plays, musicals, that whole, it's very close to film in a way, but it's a raw performance, which, you know, in film, you're obviously capturing an image and you have the time to finesse it. And live, it's like, it's there, and either you saw it or you didn't.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a magic to that, I think.
Definitely. I agree totally.
Yeah. As for Family Guy, I'm just going to say I'm not a fan, but I'm glad you're enjoying it.
That's okay. You know what? I'm not really into this whole genre. So the fact that I am at least being entertained is, it speaks accolades, I assume.
Sure. Yeah. There's something to get out of everything. I'm one of those guys that'll like surf the web and be like, oh, I heard there was like a bit where they did this and they made fun of that in Family Guy, and I'll look at that. I like watching the bits from Family Guy. I don't necessarily like watching the show. So
sure.
Whatever that's worth. Well, awesome. Cool watches. As for me, I recently rewatched the 1984 classic, one of the greatest 80s films of all time, The Karate Kid.
Yes.
I had the pleasure of seeing that in the theater with my girlfriend about two or three weeks ago. And it was already a fantastic film, but seeing it in theater, I mean, seeing any old film in theater, it just adds a level of like epicness to it, and it takes on a different life than just watching it on your TV screen. I'm a huge Karate Kid fan now. I love Cobra Kai. I grew up with the Karate Kid, like pop culture. Just I grew up with the basic knowledge of that movie existing and liking it. And then I watched the show because I was really intrigued. Like, wow, this is the first time I've ever seen Ralph Macchio come back to do anything Karate Kid, because he's sworn off so many Karate Kid reboots or sequels or anything like that. And this is the first time he's been like, yeah, I want to do something where it's not even about me technically. It's about the worst enemy. And it's not even called Karate Kid. It's called Cobra Kai, but I want to be in it. And the show is fantastic. And it really, I guess not to detract from the movie, but the reason why the show I think is so fantastic is because it takes cues from the movie. It takes plot threads and character dynamics from the film and just expands on them. And it makes you want to, if you're new to Karate Kid, it makes you want to go back and rewatch those movies and think, well, where did this whole thing start? And being able to go back and rewatch Karate Kid and kind of get a refresher of like why we're here in this Cobra Kai moment with the show. It's really awesome and really refreshing. And I also, Elizabeth Shue is like the pinnacle of 80s women. She was ridiculously cute back in the day.
Yeah, she's still cute. It's great.
I was gonna say, yeah, she's held up pretty well as being in her, I think, almost in her 50s or 60s.
Yeah, I mean, I was very, very late getting into the Karate Kid game, and I remember everyone, like, growing up and being like early elementary school and like throughout middle school, people just referencing it all over the place, people making jokes about it, and I just never got into it. It wasn't until college, actually, where I just decided to sit down and to actually watch them. And I think I'm glad that I waited so long to watch them, because I don't know if I would have gotten the same amount of satisfaction, for lack of a better term, of watching them, and I wouldn't appreciate them as much. But that being said, maybe if I did have watched them years and years back, I would have had the similar nostalgia for it. And I actually haven't even gotten into Cobra Kai yet. I did see that they added it to Netflix, so I need to get on that ball. But
oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I canceled my Netflix account a long time ago, and I had to get my cousin to give me his Netflix.
Oh no.
So I could watch it. The only reason I wanted to get Netflix was to watch Cobra Kai. And I'm halfway through season two right now, and it's awesome. That first season is I think it's one of the most flawless first seasons of a show I've ever watched. Maybe next to Daredevil season one.
Really?
Or even to get a little more sophisticated, even like season one of Breaking Bad, I think.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's so tight and solid, and just so much fun, so much character development. It's nothing feels like out of place, or like, oh, this is a studio decision where they had to have like a, I don't know, some sort of woke scene or something like that. It was all just straight story and the character, and everybody is just so likable. Even the bad guys. I guess the interesting thing is there is no real bad guy in the story, at least not yet in the show where I'm at. But yeah, I guess to wrap up, that's my recommendation. Recent watch was 1984's Cobra Kai, and if you haven't watched it, you best get on it, because the Cobra Kai train is chugging along. You don't want to miss the train. Yeah, I don't really have much. I haven't watched a lot of movies, honestly, in the past couple of weeks. I guess technically I rewatched another film that I'm a big fan of, which is Three Men and a Baby, which I saw like four times last year because I loved it so much.
Really? I never even heard of that.
It's so funny. It's about it stars Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, and Ted Danson from Cheers, and they're like three single bachelors living in this great penthouse apartment. They have really highly successful jobs, and all of a sudden they get this baby at their doorstep. They don't know whose it is. It turns out it's Ted Danson's kid, because he's an actor and he fools around with girls. And he got one pregnant, and the mom delivers the baby. She can't take care of him, and so they're forced to take care of this kid. And they are, you know, they don't have the responsibility or the will to want to be parents. And it's all about them, you know, discovering how being a father can be just as satisfying a life as being a bachelor, I guess that's the moral of the story. But I don't want to go too much into that, because I've already talked about it at length on this show. But I rewatched that.
that's great.
Would highly recommend it if you haven't seen it.
I'll definitely have to check it out.
For sure. All right, well, let's get right into our current events, starting off with brief thoughts non-spoiler thoughts on WandaVision. So if you've been living under a rock and you haven't seen WandaVision, don't worry, we're not going to spoil it yet. We're just going to give a very brief condensed thoughts of what we thought of the show overall. Later in the show, I will show a segment of our WandaVision spoiler review, which we recorded. The full thing will be available soon, but we'll give you guys a little sneak peek of that review in a little bit. But let's get right into it. So, Eric, let's start with you. What were your, without any spoilers, what was your general overall thoughts on WandaVision, the series?
Yeah, you know, the entire show is really a experience that is worth being had. Again, without any spoilers, just looking at the trailers and stuff like that, I expected it to be a very fun, campy, rom-com, sitcom, fun time episodic show with Wanda and Vision. And it turned out to be a very heartfelt story that really is really exactly what I wanted in the Marvel universe in a superhero story. Overall, I really enjoyed the show. I'm still kind of on the hype train of it all, so I don't want to give it like this is the best thing I've ever seen out of the MCU sort of rating or anything like that. So ask me again in like 3 weeks and I'll tell you exactly what I think. But as of right now, it is definitely up there. I really did enjoy the show very, very much. Lots of great moments, lots of great scenes, epic one-liners, whole kit caboodle. It's great.
Solid. Yeah, I'd have to agree. I really like the show a lot. The first two episodes really give you a sense that this is just odd. It almost makes you feel like this isn't anything connected to the MCU. It's just a show about Wanda and Vision being in a sitcom, and there's nothing weird about it or anything like that. Like I almost thought like they're gonna pull just a bait and switch, and it's gonna be like, just kidding, like Wanda and Vision this is just some fun dumb experiment that has nothing to do with Doctor Strange or anything like that or the future of the MCU, but obviously it does, and we find out pretty soon in the show. And obviously the trailers even alluded that there was more to the story than just the sitcom aspects. But not just in the way that they portray certain time periods, which people know this isn't a spoiler, but you know, like this 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s and modern day sitcoms, but how they interweave that with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and showing a deep dive into like the world post Endgame, because that's what I am most interested in this phase of the MCU, because Endgame was a masterpiece to me, and it's like how do we top that? What is the world like after Endgame? I think the reason why we're not getting, I guess without spoiling anything, I think the reason why we're not getting any Avengers movies in this phase, we're not getting an Avengers 5 yet, is because that was the end game. That was big stuff going on there.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to unpack from that, with not just Wanda and Vision as characters and how they've coped with a world post end game, but also like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and them taking on like the legacy of Captain America and taking on that shield. Like, what does that mean to them? And exploring them as fully fleshed out characters, and even Loki, how Loki's going to tie into that as well, and like basically the first alternate reality created by the Avengers doing the time travel thing in Endgame, and any other shows that are going to kind of build up and explore the world post MCU. I'm just talking about the shows. I haven't even talked about the movies. Of course, we're going to get a lot of exploration in the movies as well, especially with big hitters like Thor and Doctor Strange, which I'm really excited for. And even I've heard The Eternals is supposed to directly tie into the events of Endgame somehow. So that'll all be really interesting. And I got on a little bit of a tangent there, but basically I like this show a lot because it explores these characters post Endgame, and it gives us a very clear and new perspective on them, and it sets them up with really exciting new stories, or the potential of new stories to come. The way this show wraps everything up and the way this show weaves through different pockets of the MCU, and I consider this like a 5-hour movie basically, but it's almost like it's not even like a Scarlet Witch movie or like a Vision movie. It's just like an MCU movie where it's like you have all these things from all these different parts of the MCU. You have Darcy from Thor, you have Jimmy Woo from Ant-Man, you have obviously Wanda and Vision, the Avengers. You have S.W.O.R.D. introduced in Captain Marvel and Monica Rambeau. All these different things intersecting in this weird, crazy show. And because of its weirdness, because of its willingness to take risks, I think it's really fantastic.
I definitely agree. And the fact that it's able to incorporate all of these different things from things that we know from previous movies and even like references to the comics and things like that, in a way that still it gives that enough time to leave enough for you to be interested, but without taking away too much from the story that is actually there between Wanda and Vision. As much as it's fun to do the speculation thing, the story really does come down and boil down to Wanda and Vision, the title characters of the show. It's very, very good. Very, very good.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great character exploration of those two characters and their relationship. And also just, I'm going to be careful here, but basically Wanda's trauma. The whole show is about Wanda really getting a chance to cope with the fact that she has experienced nothing but loss and grief her entire life, and that she's never actually taken a definitive step into embracing who she is as an Avenger with these powers. And this show does a lot for that. And I, you know, one thing also I wanted to bring up was I said when Endgame was over and the first three phases of that, the Infinity Saga was done, I told myself the only way the MCU survives and continues to gain interest is if they tell these stories that are small and unique and not like earth-shattering, like world-ending or universe-ending or stuff like that. I was like, they need to pull it back. And I was afraid they wouldn't with this, not to say that there aren't any larger ramifications for the MCU, but at its heart, it is a more personal story about Wanda and Vision. And there isn't much, there isn't much that affects the world as like an Avengers Endgame or Infinity War level.
There are no Avengers level threats.
Yes. Thank God.
That's great. Yeah, definitely check out the spoiler discussion on it. That way.
Yes. That pretty much wraps up all we can say about WandaVision right now.
Yes. Yep. Even talking about it right now, it's hard to.
Hard. Oh my gosh.
To tread lightly, it's really, really hard. So
yeah, but I'm sure most of you have seen it already anyways. So for those of you who haven't, check it out and then check back to, again, hear a snippet of me and Eric's spoiler discussion of WandaVision. And and then the whole review later on that'll come out after this episode airs. All right, well, WandaVision. Check it out. Next, we're going to talk about current event number 2. Spider-Man 3, staying in the MCU, has a title. And it's kind of exciting, kind of. A lot of people are like, why are you speculating so much about this title? Like, there's nothing implied about this. And I say, no, you're wrong, because
it could mean everything.
Everything. Every letter in that title means something. Basically, the news is, this was recorded a while ago, but there was a social media campaign for the title reveal. Tom Holland, Zendaya, and Jacob Batalon, they all three revealed different titles along with still images from Spider-Man 3. And it turns out none of them were real. And upon finding out they weren't real, we got the official title, which is Spider-Man No Way Home. So Eric, I think you actually because I gave up social media for Lent this year, so I haven't been on social media since, well, I checked it today, but it's Sunday. I haven't been on it consistently since February. So you texted me and you're like, dude, what do you think this means? What do you think this means? Like, what are you talking about? It's like, they revealed the title. So then I like, oh my gosh, I've been sleeping under a rock. This whole social media campaign happened under my nose completely. But you probably know more about this than I do. So share exactly what happened, and I guess your reaction to that, what the genius of the social media campaign, and then also the title itself. Your thoughts?
Yeah. It was super duper clever. I was just going through. I knew we were expecting like a title reveal or like official like set photos, things like that. Something to be released sometime very soon. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a surprise when I was just scrolling through Instagram and I saw Tom Holland posted the new title card, and he had a little caption in it all about the movie and stuff, and it was cute. I was like, oh, that's neat. So I just keep scrolling. And I see Zendaya posted it. But I was like, wait a second. This is weird. Of course, I keep scrolling, and Jacob posted a totally different title. And I just was cracking up laughing. And it was straight from the get-go. Like, you knew they were pulling their leg. But it was just so much fun to see. Because in the comments of all the pictures, like, Tom, Zendaya, and Jacob were all poking fun at each other and at the fans and stuff like that. It was a lot of fun to see. And then sure enough, the next morning, we get this really awesome little clip from Sony of the trio walking through Sony Studios, and they're all bummed out because they got given fake titles. And for those who couldn't see me, I was doing little air quotations there. And sure enough, they walked past this whiteboard, and there it is, Spider-Man No Way Home. And it was so much fun to see that. It was a cute little nod to the fans, especially with Tom's history of spoiling things like movie titles and stuff like that. It was a fun way for them to release it. And it really did just kind of hype me up for Spider-Man No Way Home even more than I already was, which is extremely impressive, just because it's a title reveal, and not normally title reveals aren't something to get all that excited over. So
yeah, unless it's like something specific like Infinity War or Civil
Right.
War, or you know. The titles they released were, I believe it was Home Slice, Home Wrecker, and
Phone Home.
Yeah. So because when I started looking at those, I was like, well, I didn't even think I would have believed that if I saw that initially, because maybe Home Wrecker sounds, or maybe Home Slice, I don't know. They don't sound like, I think they're also kind of trolling the audience, because it's like everybody has, like with Avengers Endgame, when people were guessing the title for Avengers 4, everybody guessed like every single possible Spider-Man 3 title from the moon and back. It was nuts.
Yeah.
I was like, well, we're probably going to get a similar situation where they've named the movie something that's already been called, and we're going to be disappointed. Like, people were like, oh, Drax, you guys called it Endgame? Why didn't you call it something else? We totally guessed that. It's like,
no. Yeah. Yeah.
But No Way Home. That's so clever. I'm so impressed that they were able to figure out how to name the movie without anybody guessing that at all.
Right. They did the same thing with Far From Home. It was the same story where everyone was guessing, oh, it's probably gonna have something with home in the title. We don't know exactly what it's gonna be, but here's a couple of guesses. And sure enough, Far From Home ended up being the title. And it was the same exact story where everyone under the moon was trying to guess it and no one came up with it. So extreme kudos to everyone at Sony and Marvel on their naming staff, because
Do you think that the titles that they revealed have any, because I've heard people speculate, but what if those titles are actually alluding to the villains in the film? So do you think Homewrecker, Home Slice, and Phone Home have any inkling to, like, because they also had like different color schemes too,
right?
Do you think that's something to pay attention to? Think it's nothing.
See, I think I have not heard the villain theory, but I've heard something that's been going around is the whole multiverse thing that they're teasing with the confirmation of Electro and Dr. Octopus being in that third film.
That in this podcast at length.
Yeah. So I had read a theory that these three titles are alluding to the three Spider-Men that we've had. Homewrecker being Tom Holland's Spider-Man because he broke up the Vulture's home and because, you know, he outed Vulture as a supervillain. Home Slice being Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man because of the Spider-Man 2 meme, it's pizza time. And then Spider-Man Phone Home being being Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man because of how much time he spends on the phone. it's kind of a loose connection, but I thought it was something that was kind of neat. Realistically, they probably don't mean anything. They probably just came up with some ridiculous titles that people would get mad at and told them to post it.
I think that's probably the most likely scenario. I don't think they have anything to do with, that's clever if that was the three Spider-Men that are going to be in the film, let's get into the actual title. So if you've listened to my podcast before, Tyler Banark and I did an episode where we basically talked about how we don't believe all these ridiculous Spider-Verse rumors. I've been of the opinion that there's really nothing to back this up. Marvel has either been keeping us under strict lock and key or it's not happening. And I'll be honest, since that last episode, I've kind of changed my mind. Kind of. A little bit.
Yeah.
Here's where I'm at. So once we got more casting rumors about, like, because people have been reporting that, like, oh my gosh, Willem Dafoe is going to be back as Green Goblin, and all these superheroes and supervillains are going to be in Spider-Man No Way Home. And I was like, come on, no. Because I thought that, like, Jamie Foxx coming back as Electro was just kind of like, hey, look, sorry about Amazing Spider-Man 2. We'll give you a second chance. And I even thought that was the case for Alfred Molina. It's like, just get Alfred Molina to play Doc Ock. He's not busy. And as we've seen with, I guess not to spoil WandaVision again, but as we've seen in WandaVision, just because you cast somebody who has connections to other Marvel properties doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be playing
who we think they're playing.
Who you think they're playing. So, yeah. And I'm not implying that I think Jamie Foxx and Alfred Molina aren't playing Electro and Doc Ock. I think they are, but I don't think they're playing the versions from, I didn't think they were playing the versions from the Tobey Maguire universe and the Andrew Garfield universe. Now, I kind of think it's the case, and I'm kind of okay with it. I'm kind of not. I've said, basically, I won't go into it, but the reason, to cover in a gist, the reason why I'm not really looking forward to that is because I think it's too soon to introduce a big, crazy, nuts Spider-Verse. I want to see that maybe introduced in its own trilogy. I like seeing small-scale, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I didn't like Far From Home, not because I didn't think it was a good movie, but I don't like seeing Spider-Man being big Avengers save the world type guy. I like him. Like in Homecoming was a great film because it was him. Like he was swinging through like suburban neighborhoods. It's like, this is great. This is Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Quite literally, it was small scale stuff. And Far From Home was just like Mysterio and drones and motion capture suits and big giant mystical beings from other dimensions. And I was like, I don't want Spider-Man to fight big mystical beings from other dimensions, at least not in a Spider-Man film.
Sure.
That's just my two cents. I know people will disagree with me, but whatever. That's just been my view of Spider-Man. But the more and more I hear about this, the more and more I subscribe to it. And the title, I think, really has sold me on this, because I think the plot of this movie, I think the title gives us an indication of what the movie might be about. I think Spider-Man is going to get stuck in the multiverse. Doctor Strange is going to go through it with him. He's going through this kind of crisis where he's, you know, been labeled as a criminal. Maybe he's not even sure he wants to be Spider-Man anymore. And he goes through the multiverse and he meets his other selves with Doctor Strange helping him out. And he kind of tells him, like, this is the game, man. Like, many versions of you have gone through this time and time again. And, you know, it's a tough price to pay, but then they'll probably say, with great power comes great responsibility. And
oh, if they gave us that line.
Give us that line, man.
Ooh.
I hope this movie does kind of just kind of tie up the trilogy, the MCU Spider-Man trilogy, into a nice little bow. Because I just don't want them to do this out of left field Spider-Verse thing, because Into the Spider-Verse was a popular thing. But I also think that we're doing a Spider-Verse thing because also the logo, I paid attention to this because the logo has always been red and yellow since Spider-Man Homecoming. And for the first time ever, and I was hoping this would be the case, and they did it, it's red and blue.
Right.
I mean, if that doesn't tell you what kind of Spider-Verse movie or Spider-Man movie this is going to be, I don't know what will.
Right.
I went on for a while.
See,
thoughts
on
that
too,
Eric, and also just thoughts on your thoughts on the title.
Yeah, so I definitely picked up on that too, that with the color change. And I originally thought that it was because, oh, red and yellow are Iron Man's colors. Iron Man is dead now, so that's why they made the color change. But that's not necessarily the case, because he's dead and far from home. So I definitely am piggybacking off of your current theory that, you know, he gets stuck in the multiverse. He has to meet his past selves with Doctor Strange's help, get out, so on and so forth. I definitely think that's, in my mind, if we are getting a Spider-Verse, that is the most likely scenario, I think. As for the thought of them, you know, just doing this because Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was a big hit, I really hope that's not the case. I have faith in Kevin Feige, our Lord and Savior, to guide us through this and not be so reactionary, especially with how recent Into the Spider-Verse was in comparison to what they've been building up previously. But I think that I think we are going to get the Spider-Verse. And I think it's going to be in a fun way that we're not going to expect. I don't think they're going to do the whole repetitive plot that they did in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse that worked very, very well for that film. And then we know that it's going to tie somehow into the next Doctor Strange movie, and how it somehow calls back to WandaVision. So that's something we just need to keep an eye out for as well. And then, yeah, as for the title, I think it definitely tells us a lot about the film, whether or not we know that what it's telling us. Right now, kind of hard to say. But yeah, I'm excited. I enjoy this title, and I am looking forward to what we're getting from it. So,
yeah, for sure. Me too. I think I wouldn't be concerned about it being a cash-in to Spider-Verse if it wasn't also made by Sony.
Sure.
We all know
sure.
Sony is not the best at making decisions, although they Spider-Verse, so.
Right.
But then they also would be the ones to cash in on something successful way too fast, way too soon, I think. So we'll see. I don't know, but I'm excited for this movie.
Okay. And Feige, we trust.
And Feige, we trust. He's giving us the Doctor Strange, Spider-Man crossover that I wanted from Far From Home. So I will take that.
Right. Oh, and not to mention, we don't have to talk too much about this, but Sam Raimi, director of the original Spider-Man trilogy, directing Doctor Strange. Maybe there could be something happening there. Well, at least see Bruce Campbell, which will be kind of fun, but
of course. Yeah. I think if it wasn't Sam Raimi, I'd say no way. The fact that it is Sam Raimi, I think there's almost a likely chance that there's going to be some sort of meta connection with those two movies, which is really exciting. All right. Well, we are running a little over time, but we'll blow through these topics semi-quickly, and we'll get into it. I did want to talk a little bit longer about this one, but there's not really much to talk about because everything that's been said has already been said. But we all know that Lucasfilm made the decision, unfortunately, to fire actress Gina Carano. And I, as I've said on this show before, I don't like to talk about politics, but unless it's warranted, I don't even like to express my personal political affiliations because I just, it's not relevant to this. We're talking about movies, we're talking about things that unite us and we, that are fun. Politics is just always muddies the water. And I don't want anybody to come in feeling like they can't express their opinion on movies. Wholeheartedly, but politics we just got to stay away from. But basically, what it looks like and what's blatantly obvious is that Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm fired Gina Carano because she's a conservative. And I don't care if you are a conservative, a liberal, Republican, Democrat, independent, voted for Biden, voted for Trump, I don't care. I don't think it's right to fire somebody based on their political leanings, unless that what they're saying and doing is harmful to people. I don't think that's necessarily what she said was necessarily harmful. We all know what she's put out there. Bad Nazi,
Holocaust references.
What's that?
Holocaust references.
Holocaust references, thank you, I'm sorry. Yeah. Got tongue twisted there. Yes, Holocaust references, which generally you really shouldn't be making Holocaust. Right.
Poor taste.
Poor taste, but the message was sound. I didn't really have an issue personally with what she said. And if you're having people on both sides of the spectrum, political spectrum, working for the same company, basically saying similar things, and one person gets fired and the other person doesn't, there's a clear bias. And I know, Eric, you and I have talked about this off air, about the basically the fact that, you know, Disney is a company, they have to uphold a certain standard, which I think is I agree with. But again, when you're firing one person but not the other, it kind of shows you're kind of showing your hand a little bit. But I don't want to speak for you, so if you want to say your two cents really quick about that situation and regarding the future of Gina Carano, Cara Dune, Star Wars.
sure yeah. I mean, so I'm not on Twitter and I'm not following Gina Carano on any social media platforms. I did enjoy her portrayal of her character in The Mandalorian, of course, but other than that, I really wasn't following her at all. Until hearing the news that she was fired, that's the first I had heard of it. From what I've done in my own research in my own time, it looked like Gina had gotten a lot of you know, just slap of the hands from previous comments she's made, nothing to the extreme of what her last comment was before Disney pulled the trigger. If that was the case and she was getting multiple warnings and things like that to just stop, you know, I do support Disney's decision to let her go. You know, they are a family-friendly organization, and if someone that they're doing is being harmful, if one of their employees is being harmful to their brand or to their organization, or bringing it into a light that they don't want to be a part of, I think they do have a right to be able to pull the trigger on doing something like that. That being said, it does need to go both ways. I don't know any specific reference or any specific moments in time off the top of my head that Disney has had the chance to go both ways, aside from maybe the James Gunn situation, but that's not necessarily entirely similar. But piggybacking off the James Gunn situation, it leaves me optimistic that maybe there is a way for Gina Carano to come back. We saw James Gunn get fired off of the Guardians of the Galaxy properties, go through a coming to Jesus moment, for lack of a better term, where he's just coming out to the public being like, hey, I messed up, I'm sorry. And then he got with his people over at Disney and they worked it out. So hopefully the same thing can come back with Gina. You know, I did enjoy her performance. So hopefully not all hope is lost, but that's kind of where I'll leave that.
Yeah, I guess to bring up specific examples of what I was saying about the pendulum should swing both ways. I'm not saying anyone should be fired. I don't care what way they lean. I don't think anyone should be fired. But Pedro Pascal basically put out similar things on social media, and similar comparisons too. So that, I guess that's what I'm specifically talking about when I say that. I don't want either of them to be, I don't think either of them should be fired. Whether they're right or wrong, that's not what we're talking about. That's not what I'm wanting to discuss. I just think it's wrong to fire someone based on those specific grounds. And again, like, it is what it is, but I do also agree. I do hope that she's able to come back, they're able to make amends, especially with what I've seen from the fan base, because they are not happy. which is something I'll just touch on really briefly, but like, it seems like Star Wars is in bad blood. It's got some bad blood on its hands again. We really were in a sticky situation with the sequel trilogy. Not a lot of people liked what happened to the original characters and just the story in general. And the Mandalorian was a bright beacon for the franchise and signified like things are going to be different now. And then this happens, and it's like all that goodwill is kind of done away with. And you know, who, as far as who to blame for that decision, Lucasfilm as a whole, Kathleen Kennedy, Jon Favreau. I don't think Jon Favreau had anything to do with it. I'm sure he's trying to keep his job. He probably tried to reel her in as much as possible. But, you know, the poor guy is making all these great things. And there are a lot of people that want to boycott the franchise right now. And I don't necessarily blame them. I don't know where I'm going to swing with that person. I'm still trying to figure that out. But I think it goes without saying the brand is in a very bad place right now, and I don't know if it's going to recover anytime soon.
Here's hoping.
There's always hope.
Yep.
There's always a new hope.
Ha ha. That was good. That was good.
All right. Well, we'll kind of pick and choose some of these, because we had a lot we were going to try to talk about, but I guess we're going to, let's see. We won't talk about box office with New York. New York's reopening, theaters reopening, box office is tripping back up. Once we have more information on that, we'll cover that in a later date, but box office is back, baby. It's getting back up there, and praise be to God for that. Let's talk about, we won't talk about, I'll talk about a later date. Basically, Paramount Plus is going to release Mission Impossible, or Paramount is going to release Mission Impossible 7 and No Time to Die. Paramount Plus is going to release Mission Impossible 7 and No Time to Die they're going to get No Time to Die 45 days after the theatrical release. Wow, that was so hard to say. That's exciting. We won't go into that, but I'll talk about that at a later date when we can get into, and maybe I'll do another episode on my own about how the coronavirus has again affected the film industry. I haven't done one of those in a while because they kind of suck to do because it breaks my heart. But we're coming back now, so it's good. I might do that next week, guys. Okay, let's talk about, we'll talk about District 10, we'll talk about Luca, then we'll get into our main topic. Okay, so District 10. Do you guys even know what District 9 is?
That movie was so long ago now. It feels like a lifetime ago.
Nuts. So if you're too young to know what this is, let me tell you. Basically, Neil Blomkamp, one of the greatest science fiction filmmakers of our time, despite his, in some people's opinions, misses, he swung out big with this epic, awesome science fiction film called District 9. It was basically about aliens coming to Earth and how they were basically kind of being treated as kind of like immigrants, if I'm not mistaken. And it dealt with a lot of that and how specifically in I believe it was South Africa, right?
So South African.
That's where Neil Blomkamp comes from.
Yep.
He was originated from. He's South African. And so it's about this, I believe he's like an eviction officer or something. Charlton Copley, the main character, he's like an eviction officer, and he basically gets this like alien juice inside him, and he starts to turn into an alien himself throughout the course of the film, and he learns to sympathize with these aliens, it's been so long, I can't remember all the details, but basically it's him becoming an alien and helping these other aliens either be treated well or just, I mean, they decide to just leave Earth at the end of the film. And the thing that people joke about all the time is that the film ends with, like, this alien promises to come back for Charlton Copley and like, I'll turn you back to normal 3 years. It'll take 3 years, but I promise I'll come back in 3 years. It's been like,
it's 10. Been 10, 11 years.
It's been 10 years, man. It's been 10 years. That's my bad Charlton Copley impression.
Hey, yeah. You know what? We're not going to talk about it. It's fine.
Yeah. It happened. Oh boy. But anyways, that's District 9, and people are waiting for the sequel for a long time, and now it's finally happening, District 10 officially in the works. Neil Blomkamp will direct, and he's also writing it alongside Charlton Copley, the main actor, and Terry Tatchell, I believe that's how you say her name. I think she is his girlfriend or wife / writing partner. I'm pretty sure. I'm not too certain about that, but I heard that his wife is his writing partner, so I believe that's who that is. I'll do some research on that real quick. But Eric, your thoughts on Neil Blomkamp finally getting District 10 off the ground?
Man, I am so excited for this movie. I love District 9. It has been so long since I've watched it, but I remember sitting down and just being totally in awe with the atmosphere that he created with District 9, with the world that he built, the fact that it was only had a budget of $30 million and came out as amazing as it did in 2009. Like the makeup team and the CGI development team on that project, astounding, absolutely breathtaking. I am so excited for District 10. Now hopefully he can get a real budget behind him so he can really blow us out of the water. I hope that the story that they give us really does pays homage to District 9 and the heartstrings that it pulled throughout that story. I am beyond excited for this movie. I think it's coming at a really great time too. And District 9 was really when it came out, it was a hot button topic in terms of refugees and immigration and things like that. And it's still a hot topic to this day. So I think it's going to be a very nice, love letter to what's happening in the real world. And I'm very excited to see this movie.
Yeah, me too, man. I've been a big fan of his work post District 9. I think Elysium was okay. I think the concept in general was pretty fun, but it wasn't the movie that the trailer said it was going to be.
Sure.
Chappie, I don't care what you say. Chappie is weird and awesome. It's like, okay, it's not great, but it's not terrible either. People talk like he's just like completely lost himself and he's like making terrible films. It's like they're a little on the nose maybe with the themes, not as cleverly made as District 9, but he's not a terrible filmmaker in any sense. And I did get that confirmation. Terry Tatchell is, if I'm saying that right, I'm so sorry. She is his wife and writing partner. So that's awesome. And he's writing it with his longtime collaborator and his wife. That's awesome. We don't really have anything plot-wise to talk about, but just basically I echo your sentiments completely. I'm so excited for this film. I'm really happy for him because he's just been getting screwed over time and time again with projects. He was going to do Halo. He was going to do a new Alien. I love his concept for Alien 5. I hope to God that happens because it didn't work for some movies. The rewrite, I mean, it worked for Halloween, didn't work for Terminator, but I think that's what Alien needs. It needs a rewriting requel thing.
Yeah.
Halloween
reset.
Yeah, like it retconned everything past Halloween and did a new Halloween sequel called Halloween. And then Terminator tried to do one with Dark Fate and didn't do so well, in my personal opinion. I think that's what Alien needs. And I hope to God that he can get this off the ground. So I've seen the concepts. I just know internally what he wants to do with it. It sounds awesome. And him and Sigourney Weaver are like best friends. So come on, man, make it happen. He was going to do a RoboCop sequel. And I don't think he's doing that anymore. It's still up in the air, but he's a great sci-fi. I mean, I think he's debatably could have made a kick Star Wars movie.
Yeah. He is a probably one of the better sci-fi directors of our time.
So underrated, I think.
Super underrated. Well, if taking District 9 out of the picture, underrated. Bring District 9 into the picture.
Yeah.
I think he gets the credit he deserves. Sure. That being said, we need to start getting him on some projects and get these projects out there for us to enjoy or not enjoy.
Bob can't fix.
Yep.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, I think it goes without saying we're both looking forward to District 10. All right, let's go to our last current event, which is obviously, for those of you who know me and know my interest, this one's close to my heart because it's a Pixar movie. And I don't need to tell you that I'm a Pixar fan. You can obviously see there. So, anyways.
A little Pixar fan.
Yeah, a little bit. We got the first trailer and poster for Disney's next original animated film called Luca. It also hits personal for me because it takes place in Italy, and I'm Italian, and I love this stuff. basically the film is about two young boys who have an unforgettable summer on the Italian Riviera while harboring a secret that they are also sea monsters, and the town hates sea monsters. And so that's pretty much the extent of the plot. There's obviously some, you know, a little bit of a danger element implied in that, but it sounds wonderful. The trailer sounds, looks wonderful. I love, people aren't talking about this, but this is the most distinct looking animated film in terms of Pixar I've seen in a long time. All of their films, especially from like with the human characters, they all kind of look the same, which is fine. I'm not complaining about that. They all have like a unified look to them, the human characters. And this is the first time they've really like pushed the envelope from that. Like these guys don't look like they could exist in the Toy Story world or the Incredibles world. I guess the director of this film also directed the Pixar short La Luna. And it's more similar, it's very similar actually to that animation style. So speaking as an animation fan, I love seeing Pixar take this new direction with the look of humans and just playing with different styles, I guess. But the animation is wonderful. The story, the music, the colors, everything just looks so refreshing and new and fun. And I just think it looks splendid to get all whimsical for you. But Eric, did you see this? Have you any interest in seeing or checking out Luca at all?
Yeah, so I did see the trailer. I was very, impressed with the trailer, of course. Piggybacking off of everything you said, the animation looks great. Color palette looks amazing. I'm not, obviously not as big of a Pixar fan as you are, but I love Pixar as much as the next guy, you know? Every story that they come out with, I'll make sure I go out and watch. I love figuring out how it fits into the Pixar universe, again, using those air quotations. I'm super interested to see this movie. I am excited to see this, cute little coming-of-age story. It looks like to be a fun little story between these two characters that are going to, come to light in terms of that they're actually the sea monsters. I think it's going to be they will, in my mind, have a very hard time getting to be accepted, and I think that's what it's going to come down to, is acceptance. And I'm excited. I think these two characters are really interesting too, the two kiddos that they have playing the two main characters. God, what are their names?
Jacob Tremblay and
Glazer.
Yeah, he's the kid who plays the best friend in Shazam, I believe.
Yes. I am super excited to hear what's coming from them, because just coming from a voice acting perspective and working with kids, it's a lot of fun. So I'm really excited to see what they come up with. Of course, Pixar can do no wrong, so I'm really looking forward to it. But
Oh yeah, they absolutely can't do no wrong. Unless you count Cars 2, but.
Unless you count Cars 2.
Even Cars 2 has a bit of a charm to it, honestly. I have to
admit. Sure.
Not the perfect film, but I watch it and I have fun watching it, so.
It's fun. And it's okay for Pixar to not rip our hearts out every once in a while.
It's nice to have a break every now and then. For sure. I started my year with Onward breaking my heart, and I ended the year with Soul breaking my soul. Even keel balance, for sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, that was our current events. Let's bring down the list real quick. That was our WandaVision non-spoiler thoughts. The title reveal for Spider-Man 3, which is Spider-Man No Way Home. Gina Carano being fired from Lucasfilm. District 10 being in the works, and the first teaser and poster for Disney Pixar's Luca. And now let's get on to our topic of the week, which is us sharing a spoilery review of WandaVision. So Eric and I obviously talked about our spoilery thoughts on the show. We broke down everything. everything we wanted to, at least. And we just kind of had a full review and analysis of the show. So we're going to show you guys a brief clip, about 5 to 10 minutes of our discussion of WandaVisions, the spoiler discussion of WandaVision. And then we'll come back, wrap this up. So I hope you guys enjoy that. Let's talk about, you mentioned like where the show stands in terms of like the whole MCU going forward, especially post Endgame. Because my big thing going into this next phase of the MCU was, how are we going to see the world post Endgame? That was my biggest thing. Because like Endgame was like, it quite literally was the Endgame. I was like, I want to see what there is, if anything, for Marvel to explore. And my hope was that we were going to explore characters that we haven't spent a lot of time with and delve into them and spend, and kind of like how we're doing a Black Widow movie, and now we're doing WandaVision, we're doing Falcon the Winter Soldier, we're finally getting Doctor Strange 2, you know, like all these things, we're finally gonna get taking a breath, and we're exploring characters we haven't actually got to explore on a solo basis yet. This is technically the Scarlet Witch movie, while also being just a crazy MCU movie series thing. I see this more as a 5-hour film than I do a series.
Sure.
I mean, of course, it's a show. That is what it is.
Yep.
But the way they shoot it, the way it's structured, it's basically a 5.5-6-hour Marvel movie, and I love that. I thought it was great. And the way that they address that specific question of what is the world like after Endgame, and the answer is, it's kind of in a bit of a disarray.
Right. And I like how it's not giving us a full answer right away too. That, you know, between WandaVision and now Far From Home, we have gotten very, like, in Far From Home, it's a very, like, you know, spur of the moment. Everyone just poof right back into existence, you know, interrupting the basketball game. but then in WandaVision, it's a very, you know, chaotic event. You know, it's sparking anarchy. And I think over these next few projects, we're going to see quite a bit more of that. And I'm very excited. I am loving the picture that they're painting in this world post Endgame.
You brought up an interesting point, like that scene, that first scene where we get the introduction of Monica Rambeau, and she's snapped back into existence and everybody's snapping back. We never saw anybody snap back in Endgame. And I'm forgetting we did see people snap back in Far From Home. It's because I forgot about that movie. but seeing it in such a chaotic way was really interesting. The way that they kind of showed it, like, it's, yes, the Avengers did it. They saved the day. But it's not exactly all, you know, flowers and roses or anything like that. Sure. It's still a world that's very confused and not only have they come back 5 years later, but they've lost three of their main heroes. They've lost Iron Man. They've lost Captain America. Technically, they've lost Captain America. He's obviously still alive, just not, you know,
right,
fighting shape.
Yeah, he won't be in the news anytime soon.
Won't be in the news anytime soon, exactly. So the world needs new heroes. The world needs people to step up. And it's not exactly as straight cut as we're getting new heroes, because the way the show ends has kind of an anti-hero feel to it. Wanda is not exactly the Scarlet Witch for the better.
No, she is very much a villain.
Yeah, the arc implies that it's that she's kind of come into her own and she's embraced these powers. But I don't even want to say she's, personally, I don't want to say she's full-blown villain. Or even on track to become a villain. I just think that because she's dealt with her trauma, it's gone. At least that's what's implied. The interesting thing is just how she's perceived. which kind of gives her this like Incredible Hulk arc where, you know, Hulk was always, Bruce Banner was just, you know, he was worried about his perception. Like people didn't like him or people didn't like the Hulk, and the Hulk was capable of being a gentle creature. Just, he didn't, you know, nobody could see him as a person, and they just saw rage, and he just, you know, personified what people saw in him. And it's a little bit like that with Scarlet Witch, where she's obviously done this crazy thing that's affected a lot of people, and they're perceiving her in a specific way, to where that might drive her towards a more villainous path. But I think the end goal for Wanda is that she is going to be perceived as a hero again, and that this series is portrayed as a moment of healing for Wanda too. So I don't necessarily think it's going to be all villain stuff going forward with Wanda, but it's definitely a more of an origin story for Wanda than her introduction in Age of Ultron was, honestly.
Sure. See, I don't know. I don't know if I agree that, you know, her grief has been totally, you know, resolved, right? You know, we see in the post-credit scene of WandaVision, you know, she's searching through the Darkhold using her astral projection that we see in Doctor Strange, and she's searching through the Darkhold, and you can hear Billy and Tommy screaming and calling out for help in the background. I don't think it's quite resolved yet. You know, she's come to realize that, you know, holding an entire town hostage to deal with her grief isn't the way to do it. But I think she's going to continue to, you know, dive down this path that she shouldn't be going down, and especially without having any sort of help, that she, in all intents and purposes, does not know what she's doing. And even the, you know, antagonist of the show, Agatha, calls that out. She's like, hey, you are inexperienced. You need my help. And she just responds, I know where to find you if I do. So I think what we're seeing is a, you know, a very hurt Wanda that is, you know, trying to find a way to deal with her pain. And we see her attempt that one way with what happens in WandaVision, and now we're going into something else. Whether it's, you know, Nightmare or Mephisto or C'thon or whatever comic book supernatural entity that you want to bring in, is yet to be seen. But I think that we're going to get a Wanda bite off a bit more than she can chew, or gets, you know, manipulated into helping someone she shouldn't. And I think we are seeing the start of a villainous arc for Wanda. That being said, I do think we're going to see her come out of it. I think we're going to get a redemption story eventually for all the bad she's done, but not without you know, breaking a few eggs. So
got it. You know comics way better than I do, so I think that maybe there is something I'm missing there, because I know her thing in the comics is her grief, and that she's just mega powerful and that she can, you know, create and destroy reality at will.
Yep.
And I think the I see where you're coming from with the villainous thing. I guess where I thought where I thought the show ended was that she did put her grief to bed. And maybe it's Vision specifically that she's put to bed. Maybe it's her unwillingness to let Vision go that's put to bed. Maybe not her willingness to let go of her kids.
Sure.
Because obviously there's still more to explore with Vision. So, and let's actually get into that really quick. Let's talk about Vision in this show, and not just and Vision in this show, and then also the future of Vision, because I was so afraid they were going to end this with killing Vision, just be like, all right, he's dead. So he's just a dead Avenger, and he's just never coming back. It's like, what a waste. But right. They saved him. But before we get into that, technically there have been three Visions in existence. There's the original Vision, the Hex Vision, and then White Vision. And Hex Vision is not, you know, as Wanda says in the show, he is the personified memory of the Mind Stone that lives in her. Or the personified memory of Vision, which came from the Mind Stone, because they both got their powers from the Mind Stone, so it makes sense that she could, you know, basically create reality and then recreate a brand new Vision. He's not exactly, you know, like the traditional Vision, though. He has the same mannerisms. He has the same, I think, will to do good, to do what's right, and to help people. But he's, you know, he's kind of, again, like in the sitcom stuff, he plays the bumbling husband, which is
the bumbling husband's where uncharacteristic of him. And then he also yells, which is something we never see him do in
when he's like angry and yelling, like, what's outside of Westview? Like,
yeah, like that was kind of scary.
Reacting.
Or even like in terms of his powers, we see him, like, you know, he gets slowed down by chewing gum or swallowing chewing gum. Mm-hmm. Like, just simple little things like that, that aren't present in the normal Vision. So yeah, and I want to mention this, is that I think it was very, very awesome how they're bringing Vision back. I was really worried that, you know, somehow by the, you know, powers that be, Wanda was just going to will him back into existence in flesh and blood. And it was going to be super campy and kind of, you know, weird. But I was very impressed with how they handled it. I knew that they were bringing Vision back just because, you know, it's the MCU and they bring everybody back. But it was very cool to see this, you know, first callback to the comics, which is cool, and then how they handled it in the show, then left it open-ended for us to, you know, speculate on and hopefully come back to in the future.
You're talking about White Vision?
White Vision, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and it's something that I had, like, basic knowledge about, that Vision was white at one point in the comics, but I didn't really know what it was or what it had to do with the comics. And seeing that post-credit scene, I'm just like, oh, no, but oh, yes! Because I did predict, like, the one thing I did predict on the money was that Vision's body is going to be, once you learn that Vision's body was not stolen by Wanda, she didn't reanimate his body, I figured, like, okay, they're going to restore Vision's body somehow, and then the memory of Vision, the Hex Vision and the White Vision are going to merge. And that kind of happened. It didn't happen how I thought it would. Obviously, White Vision has the original Vision's memories, which kind of, I compare this now to, I'm making all these, like I compared Scarlet Witch to the Hulk, and now I'm comparing Vision to Bucky. I think we're going to get a kind of Bucky Winter Soldier's type arc for Vision, where he's going to be going back and retracing who he was and rediscovering who he was. And it remains to be seen, but, you know, like, I hope that would lead to him falling back in love with Wanda. Because I don't necessarily think we're going to get the original Vision back. I think this is a brand new character. Capable, you know, very different from, not super different from Vision, but he's not going
different enough.
Different enough.
Yeah. And this is something I'd be interested to pick your brain on. So in the comics, when this happened, you know, similar to how it happens in the show, Vision is rebuilt, and he comes back white, and he recalls all of the memories of the past Vision, but does not retain any of the emotional attachments that he had back when he was the old Vision. I think the way that we're going to go with this is that we're going to see Vision come, you know, come back into the picture and start doing Vision things again, but he's not going to fall back in love with Wanda. He's going to meet his kids and not care for his kids. He's just going to be like, hey, I know who you are. I appreciate your existence, but
you know, I'm not your father. And that's the same thing that happens in the comics where he meets Wanda and he meets his kids and he's like, I'm not your father. Wanda is not my wife. And that was a huge breaking point for Wanda. And I'm hoping that we see a similar thing happen in the MCU as well. But that also is just my my incessant need for grief-stricken shows and sad sappy stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of, yeah, I mean, again, Wanda is an interesting character because of her struggles with grief. And I think that if they're going to pull that thread with Vision, that's an interesting thread. Yeah, my hope is kind of that Vision kind of falls in love with Vision and Wanda fall in love again, but in a different way. I guess just think about what would be emotionally satisfying to see. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll see. We don't know. We didn't even know where he went at the end of that episode.
Right. Maybe we see Vision and Wanda fall back in love in a way that's, because if you look back and watch like Civil War, they're very toxic to each other. Like Vision set on babysitting duty basically for Wanda. And then when Wanda realizes it and Clint comes to get her from the Avengers facility, she buries him in the ground. Like it's a not like, I guess in
Hawkeye comes against Wanda from the,
yeah. Right. Right. And it's, I guess maybe in superhero terms, that's not anything too crazy, but in my mind, like, and as a, you know, if that's my love interest, that's very traumatizing.
All right. So that's how our spoiler review for WandaVision went down. I hope you guys enjoyed that segment. I'm sorry we couldn't give you an actual topic of the week, but, you know, it works because Eric and I are still here to talk. And I brought him on to talk specifically about WandaVision. So it all works out. but yeah, I'm glad you guys were able to check out this last episode. Yeah, if you're not watching the MCU right now, you got to check out WandaVision. It's such a great show. It's custom built for MCU lovers, and you're going to enjoy it so much. I guess to kind of wrap things up, Eric, what are your thoughts going into? We're upon the recording of this episode, we're about a week away from The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So what are your thoughts going into that show? What are your thoughts on the future of the MCU?
Yeah, I think, I'm very excited, optimistic. I'm really looking forward to what's happening next. It does look like we are getting a bit of a reset, and we're going to fill in some gaps that we're currently missing. The current MCU is set in 2023, so we're, you know, we're at this point, I think we're starting to catch up to 2023. And I think that's just what we're going into. And I'm very excited to see what the MCU has in store. Of course, we got our reset. We're going to take things slow, take a deep breath, one step at a time, similar to how it started all the way back with Iron Man. And hopefully we can build up to something bigger and better just on the same level or as higher than Endgame and another 10 to 20 films down the line.
Oh yeah, I think that's the goal. I think that's the goal. Is 10 years from now we'll get something equally as epic and exciting as Endgame. At least I hope. And yeah, I agree. I think the 5-year gap was a little more intentional than we initially expected because I think again it does give us a chance to revisit these characters and explore them in a way we haven't before. We get to revisit. My hair is doing something weird. We get to revisit Wanda and Vision and Falcon and Winter Soldier. We get to introduce new characters like Moon Knight, She-Hulk, and Ms. Marvel. We get to explore established characters, like bigger, heavy hitter established characters like Thor and Doctor Strange and Captain Marvel. And it's going to culminate into something in Phase 5, that's for sure. But I like that this phase starting out is just going to be a, hey, let's take a breather. And let's just visit some of these smaller scale heroes.
Which is weird to say, because we're getting 1,000,002 Marvel, superhero Marvel projects this over the next year and a half. So
yeah. And yeah, let's visit these kind of B-list superheroes who are about to become A-list superheroes. Because again, like with Iron Man, Captain America, Black Widow, some of these other heroes kind of ending their shows, like there needs to be a new, there needs to be a new guard to fill in their spots. So obviously Falcon and Winter Soldier are going to fill the Captain America spot. Wanda is just going to become a much more prominent figure, as well as Doctor Strange. I think we have Thor and Hulk for a little while longer before we actually have to say goodbye to them. It seems like Chris Hemsworth isn't going anywhere anytime soon, which I'm so glad, because I started really liking Thor after Ragnarok. Obviously, for obvious reasons. But yeah, I'd say the future of the MCU is looking pretty bright. And that's all we got today, guys. Yeah, looks like we're making good time. So thank you all for checking out this episode of the Vince Salerno Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, hit the like button. Well, this will be on YouTube. So yeah, hit the like. Give us a comment, whether it's on Anchor or on YouTube, and subscribe to my YouTube channel. You can check out my short films, my trailer reactions, excerpts from the Vince Salerno Podcast, or just full podcast episodes and jokes. That's where I'll upload this. And everything in between. I have a new director's reel up, so if you guys want to check out my directing things and see what I do, you can check that out as well. And special thanks to Eric Wells for joining us. Eric, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back very soon, probably to discuss Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
I hope so. I am looking forward to that.
Awesome. And where can people find you online if they want to follow what you're doing?
Yeah, if they want to follow what I'm doing, I'm not super active on social media, but if you want to, you can catch me on Instagram at uwells502. Similarly on Twitter as well, even though Twitter is very dead for me. But yeah, you can catch me on there.
It's probably best you're staying off Twitter. I still have not been on it in a while.
Sure.
It's just bad. It's so bad. Word of advice, people, stay off Twitter. All right, guys. Well, I will see you very soon. I'll probably record a new episode that will be an update on how the coronavirus has affected the film industry. I said I wanted to take a break from all those because they're depressing, but we're starting to see some good things happening in the industry. So I do want to cover that with you guys. So stay tuned for that next episode coming out after this one. And I will talk to you guys later. Have a great day or a great night, whatever time of day it is for you guys. Have a good one. God bless and peace out.